What we're talking about, Olympic sports, 25 years since the Sydney Olympics. Mate, they were some good days, that 2 weeks.
That was incredible. I mean, you were there for Kathy's run. So, I mean, it's one of the ones where someone mentions it and the hairs on your neck stand up, like the Socceroos qualifying or the day we heard we got the Olympics.
I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality. Find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. The week that was. Before we get started on that, it's the thing that blew me away was that this, your standing, obviously, in the community, because the little highlights I did of our week in review last week that were up there, my lovely assistant Josephine did. Sound like I've off a sail of the century there for a minute. Yeah. It's got the best traction of any highlight I've sent out. Even had our old mate Lidders chime in and said, well done, boys. Will you need a North American correspondent? So it can be in the future.
Yeah.
You're pulling in the audiences, mate. I think it drew a few people out of the cobwebs, Ange. I hope she doesn't listen to this. Surname escapes me. She's in Iceland or something. Like, she called us a dynamic duo, and I replied to that, anyway. Well, Ange Wade.
Oh, Ange Wade.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So well done, mate. You've brought in new audiences. So
that's great to know. Good for my ego, anyway.
Exactly. Oh, mate, and an absolute smashing to mine. I'm like, you mean that's all I need to do? Just bring in some outside people? It's funny when I do, I do social media and I just add Kate to a post about my coaching, it always does 10 times the audience. So obviously not there for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll start with the NRL finals. We were talking about the AFL and neither of us had seen much of it over the weekend, so we thought we'd steer clear. But the Panthers, we mentioned it last week, but like, can they be stopped?
I don't know. Who do you think out of the teams left would stop them?
I think only the Broncos. I think that's that side. The winner comes from that side, I reckon. The Broncos can be inconsistent, but when they're good, they're unbelievable. And if Ezra Mam and Adam Reynolds are back, then could score a lot of points. Be interesting. The thing is that the Panthers, when they get ahead, are hard to run down, but they haven't really been, haven't really fallen behind a heap in the last couple of months. So yeah, be interesting.
Yeah, they look like
unlucky.
Yeah, I think that the game kind of, I feel like with the Dogs, the game hinges on certain things, and then they get themselves on the back. If it doesn't roll for them, they get themselves on the back foot, and that. I asked whether it could have been a penalty try, but I think that was a bit too much. But definitely a sin binning, I think.
100%. I thought they were dudded there, and that's like right at the start of the game.
Yeah,
and I reckon that should have been a sin bin, and they would have scored that. I reckon like that next ruck. If he didn't regather and score himself, then that next ruck they would have scored for sure. Well, I don't understand why it wasn't a sin bin. Just because the push was subtle, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, is that something the guys upstairs can say? Hey, have another look, or
like, yeah,
hey, we recommend.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the sort of stuff I don't understand.
I think you talked about the roll forward. Like, to me, all this talk about Galvin and coming in and Toby Sexton not being there and then coming back, it's like ultimately what has happened is that they haven't got that roll on. There was a game 3 weeks ago, it was the Tigers, So the Tigers have had a middle of the range year, but the Dogs couldn't get out of their own end. They were camped on their 30-metre line for about four sets in a row. And that's the problem. Like that, a halfback or a 5'8" is not going to change that. And I think they've just been finally exposed in the back end of the year for not having enough big fellas who could shore up the middle and then roll down the park. It happens in this league, right? If your big fellas don't make yardage, you just don't win.
And it's those second balls that those guys can, those really good big guys can pop, and that just changes everything. Then the ruck's loose, everyone's like not in position. And it happened to the, I think I was saying this to you before we went on air, it happened to the Dogs where they committed too many men in, I think it was the second or third Panthers try. There was two players, had a guy in a tackle, the third guy rushed in, and he popped the ball as soon as the third guy went in, and there's just a long pass out to the right-hand side, and they were short on numbers.
The contrast to that was when the Dogs were attacking. I think it was just after Galvin had scored, and To'o stayed out on his winger and he trusted his centre to make the tackle, which just didn't seem to happen. The wing always jams in when they don't need to. He stayed out and he just took Connor Tracy straight over the sideline. I think that's what, if you look at the difference also, it's like the connection. Suddenly Panthers have got everyone fit. They're looking so super connected, which wasn't happening at the start of the year, whereas the Dogs at time defensively looked a little bit all over the place. And maybe
the Raiders. Yeah, I think the Raiders had the same problem. You're talking about the wingers rushing in. There was I think it was about three times that the winger was on his own and he just had to make a call and he's rushed in and they had acres of room outside him. So, yeah.
For the Raiders, I just think the previous weeks, what's cost them, like just the disappointment. They won the game twice. We talked about it last week on the show.
Sucked the energy out of them.
Oh, 100%. They talked about the 1995. That's how old we are. When the Broncos and the Raiders were winning pretty much every comp there for 5 years, they played in a qualifying final, and the thought was that go on and meet in the grand final. But the Raiders got knocked out by the Dogs the next week, and then the Broncos got knocked out by the Dogs the week after. And they're saying that the players said it was the toughest club game they've ever played in, and it knocked them around. So it would be interesting to see how even the Broncos bounce back this week.
That Dogs run, not to harp on good Dogs run, but that Dogs run in 95, I'm pretty sure they also might have played the Saints in that run, was it? Or maybe that was 98. And in the wet and
I think it was the Dragons.
And that was a tough game as well.
98, they absolutely Parra beat up the Bears, and then the Dogs beat them up the week after. Both games were brutal, and no coincidence that we had half the Dogs pack in 98 from the Super League trade. So, and then the Dogs went on a run in both those years.
Panthers are like, this is what it's looking like for the Panthers. The Dogs built momentum in that 95 run. And they were knocking off pretty big names. And then, I guess it's a little different. The Panthers are, going to be five-time champions if they can win it.
I'm not a Parramatta fan that hates Penrith. I haven't grown up as a local person playing against them and having that rivalry. Like, if I'm going to hate on teams, it's like other teams from when I'm growing up, which is Manly Dogs, which is the rivalry you had in the 80s, and then more recently the Storm. I reckon it'd be such a great story if they won five, especially how many records they're going to have to break. I can remember you and I talking after golf one afternoon, when they just played one of the worst games that they'd played in the last 6 years, where it looked like they were complete strangers. They just couldn't string a pass together. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. And I think anyone who's played team sport with people long enough, sometimes you have one of those seasons and you just all get together and go, where are our heads at? And suddenly, it can come together when you just remember. You go back to the basics and you start, like you said, start rolling forward. I don't know what The Penrith fans be able to tell us what the turning point was this year, whether it
They reckon
was
it was
one or two things.
the game out at was it Dubbo or Bathurst or Mudgee, maybe one of those country centres where they got beaten by, oh, can't remember. No, Mudgee was the one where they won, where the Raiders won when they went the length of the field off the drop kick. It was previous to that, and they were just awful. And apparently, they had some pretty direct and brutal conversations after that. And since then, they've gone on their run. So maybe it's like life, right? Sometimes you've got to have a rock bottom moment to get out the other side. I think, the Raiders definitely. The impact of the emotional come down of having thought they'd won it twice. Let us think of, when you have moments like that in life, it's 1 week's hard to recover. But that would have been like that would have had the longest week. It would have been awful.
I think that what happens to some players is they've probably thought we've got two chances or we've got three chances, and then those chances are going away, and they're starting to think, we've had such a great season, we can't lose it. We've dominated, we can't, it'd be unthinkable. And then you get in situations where you start to second guess yourself. And that's what it looked like in the Raiders in that last game. It's that just nothing was flowing the way it has been all year. And a lack of trust, like you said before, is they start to second guess the guy next to him who's maybe making a bad decision. It
And
all rolls.
they also, yeah, absolutely. And they also, I noticed that they started doing that, like, the effort was still there, but sometimes it's like just effort for effort's sake, or almost individual effort instead of going, a couple of guys trying to come out of the line and pull off a hit and all those different things. But like that sort of unraveled a bit from there. And we must say the Sharks were good. Like I've done episodes here on Nicho Hynes and how, not able to own those big moments. But he was enormous. And they talked about the big fellas, the boppers, like they just rolled a lot, like rolled over the top of them. Like the in the forwards, they've got a good pack, plus they've got really good guys coming in off the bench. I've just dominated. They might, I reckon they're a decent chance against the Storm, which is unbelievable given where the Sharks were a couple of months ago.
And going back to your point before, when you're talking about effort, sometimes it's effort at the wrong time as well. Like the Panthers seem to know when to rest, when to when to put the effort in all together as a team, if I can make a comparison to football, is that if half of your team is pressing and the other half isn't, then it's bad news. But if you're all working together as a machine at the right times, it's a beautiful thing. So
And I think because they've done it so many times together and had success, even though there's been new cattle each year, just those main players in the key roles we'd only have to look at each other. It's like we played football together and a few of the other guys we played with for years. It was just a glance and you knew exactly what was on.
exactly.
And to do it in a high pressure and cutthroat, well, they have and had success, like it would just be like putting on a favorite pair of shoes. It's actually incredible. Incredible. Now, we're supposed to be talking about the lighter side, but we did both said that we couldn't find a great deal. One thing I saw, which I thought was quite funny, was and again, it's a little bit of an indictment on society where these things go. There was someone did a because Aussie sprinter Gout Gout, who's 17 and did an amazing job in the heat to make the semis, but then didn't go through to the final, even though he ran quite well. And someone wrote a headline out in somewhere in the UK or something, and there was all he got all this grief about it. And I'm like, that's just funny. Like, since when? Like, since when are we getting offended at that? Seriously.
I know it's, and with, like most people realize that, the kid's 17, and he'll learn those big moments, and he's probably taken a lot from all those games, and all
Yeah,
that,
100%. You'd
each of
think.
those heats has taught him a lot.
It maybe, It made me think about your mate, Bill Burr, like who regularly is calling people out for getting offended at things.
And look, it seems like being offended is a professional thing these days.
100%.
And it's a personal choice. You choose to get offended or you don't choose to get offended. There is
Ricky Gervais
no.
said,
Yeah, go for it.
sorry. Yeah, Ricky Gervais talks about emotions being personal. So,
Yeah.
like, one person says something that's funny, and another per and then I say it to someone else, and it's offended. Like, well, that's just a personal preference. It
Yeah.
doesn't mean I have to stop saying it because, like, you personally are like that. It's crazy.
And you can use it as well. I think that his coach wouldn't be like keeping some of those clippings and then when he is successful, bringing him out again and said, we use this as
Again,
fuel. Yeah.
exactly. Queensland origin style. You said you noticed there was the Aussies got the baton hand over, and you said you did a bit of a digging into in some of the history of high
Yeah.
profile
Well,
sprinting teams getting it wrong.
there's plenty on YouTube if anyone wants to check it out. But I just remembered that, it's a bad mistake putting your foot in the wrong side of the line. Especially where there's a line there, it's not an imaginary line.
And it's bright blue.
It's bright blue. But you go back and look at some of the American sprinting teams, the women and the men, who are probably the most professional sprinters on the planet. There's a collection of stuff that they've got wrong. Dropping the baton. There's one where the girl had it in her hand and the other girl held onto it, and then they both dropped it at the same time. There's one where the American guy was just so focused, he leaned into the other lane, clipped the other runner, and then fell over. And then another time, the Americans got clipped, and I think they went on to win gold because they got allowed to rerun a heat by themselves because the other people got disqualified. They made a qualifying time. They then went on to win gold. So it's swings and roundabouts, but it can happen to the best of teams.
Yeah, and a lot of those US teams from memory were like a chance of breaking world records
Oh,
and
100%.
like completely blowing the field away, and it's amazing like that favoritism and that expectation, how that puts more pressure on. Because some of the I can actually, as you were talking, I was having some flashbacks of some of those dodgy baton changes. It's like they just got it so wrong. And is that
Yeah.
pressure or is that ego or like, because they all want to be the best, and then come together a team is harder. I don't know.
When you look at the slow-mo, they just both look focused, just almost too focused. The one's focused on running, the other one's focused on getting it in their hand, and the other one. So it might be just a case of just taking that breath, doing the simple things right, and then maybe they were just too far ahead in their own heads. It happens. Like the
Yeah,
poor people who, on a false start, who run halfway around the track before they get told they've got to go back again,
was a
which I
moment
did
like that.
there one of the highlights.
Wasn't there a moment like that in one of the NRL games in the weekend, where they kept playing and it had already been called back? No, it
Yeah.
was the Wallabies. It was the Wallabies game 2 weeks ago. I'm getting my codes mixed up. I just had a
Yeah.
flashback. Immediately with brain, that's impossible. What we're talking about, Olympic sports, 25 years since the Sydney Olympics this September. So this very time, like Sydney always seems to, I remember 1 year it hasn't, but pretty much every year since then, it turns on this weather that we're having at the moment, which is like somewhere between 23 and 28 every single day. And mate, that was some good days. That 2 weeks.
That was incredible. You were there for Kathy's run. So, that's one of the ones where someone mentions it and the hairs on your neck stand up, like the Socceroos qualifying or the day we got the Olympics. I remember diving through a bush down at the Opera
And
House,
then
hugging a few crazy mates.
and walking up literally the middle of George Street with all the other
Yep.
people celebrating while guys were walking to work in their suits.
Yeah, high-fiving
That was
them.
crazy. Yeah, I think that was probably because we just didn't really expect we'd get it. The expectation was that China would get it, and the as usual, the Olympic vote was a stitch up for the highest bidder. And yeah, that was unbelievable, unbelievable that. And again, that was 7 years before the Olympics, maybe. So that's 32 years ago. Oh, a little aside for remember on the way home, we got the train and we had to get into the junction at Hornsby and then catch one train back, and one of our mates didn't get off the train after that one stop, and we're like, what happened to him? It had been a long night. We were tired and emotional, shall we say. And then he knocks on my door about 4 years, 4 years, four, 4 hours later after riding the
Three
Sydney,
loops.
Sydney, three loops of
Yeah,
the,
three loops of
Hornsby,
Penrith.
Hornsby. Fantastic. Oh, the things we could get away with back in the
And wake up
day.
in the rail yards, if I believe, and had to pry his way out of the door.
Oh, again, the things you get away with back then. So 25 years, and I was, yeah, that Cathy night was unbelievable. I went to a few events, and it was always a great atmosphere out there. Even I think we just went out to the Olympic precinct a couple of nights just to sort of, soak up the atmosphere. But there was nothing like that Cathy night where we were right on that 100 meter. When they come around the bend and just the crowd surging together, which our old mate Phil Yeomans had said to me, like, athletics crowds are like nothing else. And it was. And you said the amount of people that have claimed they were there on the night, with Michael Bevans,
Yeah,
Paul,
next thing you'll tell us you're at the Steve Waugh day.
actually, I was. I even got the t-shirt to prove it. Oh, mate, we were at a few good ones. Actually, speaking of long anniversaries and where people said they were there, 20 years since that breaking the World Cup qualification drought, and I saw Jono Lewisi and Mark Swartz being interviewed this week. They were doing a bit of promotion for it, and them saying, yeah, like they met, apparently there were 180,000 people there, but he goes, but I've met probably about 150,000 that they were there. I think that's just that's just true for big events. Yeah.
Incredible night. I think that's the most I've seen a crowd have sustained energy for. I don't think, it was before we scored, it was just, I think the Uruguayans had a shot right at the start. And it was down our end. And we
Recoba.
thought, Recoba. And then he did nothing for the rest of the game. And they did nothing for the rest of the game. But it was an amazing night.
It just chills the whole way through that. You knew it was going to be different when the Uruguayan national anthem came on and people started booing, and we all looked at each other and shrugged and went, okay, I guess we're doing this. And the Australian crowd, which is usually very polite, and but it's like, no, fuck this. We've been burned by going to these different countries at qualification time where they do not give a shit. So it was like, it's our time. And yeah, it was, I think that was a real moment where, and even some of the players I've seen in interviews saying that they saw that as a bit of a moment too when they went, ooh. Oh, on the tunnel before. What was the incident in the tunnel beforehand? Was it Popper? I'd got one of them in the head, like by the throat or something. Is that right? Something like that. When they were trying to like talk shit or something before the game, and Popper just said, no, one of the other players was saying, Popper just went, no, not today. We're gonna bully you. Oh, what a night that was. 20 years in November.
And speaking of, did we fly into Montevideo the day of for that 2006 as opposed to the ones we'd been before? Because I remember players talking about they were in the hotel and they were just banging drums all night outside the hotel, but I have a feeling it was either 2006 or another time they flew in that morning, so they didn't have to do it.
I know that they made sure they got all the logistics like 100%, because remember they went in the 4 years before, they got spat on at the hotel. And
And a few videos on the plane and stuff like that.
on the
They
LA trip back, because we started,
want to
oh,
get back.
I did hear some stories about the no, I actually probably shouldn't say that.
Leave that for our up late podcast.
Exactly, the subscription-based one. But let's
Meet
just
the
say
graph
they
at
got
night. That's what it would be
that's right.
called.
Australia won the jackpot by getting the first leg away, which was very beneficial as it turned out. Let's get rid of it there. Another anniversary I saw just today, 10 years since what they call the Miracle of Brighton, where Japan beat the Springboks in the Rugby World Cup. Apparently rugby in Japan has just got bigger and bigger, but what, imagine being a Japanese fan for that sort of victory. That's like upset of all upsets.
Well, I know a little bit about this because my nephew has his own personal fan over there in Japan.
Wow,
And he
interesting.
actually went and visited him. So they are right into their rugby, and it's like anywhere that I guess affluent and wants to make it. It's sort of like the Dubai in football or the Saudis in football, Japanese maybe in rugby, pay well, get their own guys in the teams alongside some players who've maybe aged out of where they were or were just weren't considered because there's a glut of great players like New Zealanders, and I know a lot of those guys go and play in London and stuff like that, but I think Japan's the same way. It's quite lucrative to play there.
And it wouldn't surprise me to see them be a world force down the track. There's a book I've read, it's called A Slight Edge. It talks about the difference between American mentality and Japanese mentality in the car industry in the 70s. America went bigger and bolder and let's sell a whole lot now. Japan went like, how do we be the best company in 100 years? And they built reliable, strong. Funny story, they would have gone through the horse names. There was the Mitsubishi Colt, and then they're going to have the Stallion, but it, something got lost in the translation. It's the Mitsubishi Sparon. The actual name, Mr. Keggs had a Stallion
I do want to
at
tell
it's all time.
you.
But a true story, a true story. But yeah, the Japanese car market just went from strength to strength, whereas the American car industry really dived after that. And you look at football, they
And you only have to
integrate.
look at the Argies too.
Yeah.
Look at the Argies. I mean, they're now a force in rugby.
Yeah, 100%. That's just by more and more people getting involved in the game. The J League in the football, their plan that they put together was for the J League to be the best league in the world in 100 years' time. Whereas the A League, we had to go bigger, better because of the landscape. We've got so much competition, but maybe also because they just got it wrong. So they went hard early, and the A League was amazing in those first few years, like sold out crowds for the first weekend, big names coming out. But now look where we are, right? They didn't plan for long term, and now it's like I went to a game this year because it was free tickets. There would have been 7,000 people there, and it just there's no soul to it. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Japanese, with their long term planning, that they do become a force in the world of rugby. Personal fan, that's interesting. Is that that's not creepy at all that he went to visit him?
No, I think he's just a genuine fan, and they actually went and had dinner, I think, at his place with him and his wife. So he's like not like a lone gunman or anything like that. He's just a rugby fan, and
The local boys here at the Mighty Warringah Tigers, they do like, you know, they have a swap with Japan where the young team goes over there and vice versa, and they were saying that the nights out they had with the Japanese dads of those rugby squads were off the charts. So the rumors are
Well,
true, they do like a good time and a karaoke.
yeah, 100%. And if you're like going to feed my nephew, who's 6'5" and 130 kilos, that's a lot of fish. A lot of fish.
More fugu.
That's right. More frigates.
Fantastic. You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.